அன்னை அன்பர்கள் அனைவருக்கும் எங்களது காலை வணக்கங்கள். இன்று லைஃப் டிவைன் வெப் மீட்டிங் மிஸ்டர் கேரி ஜேக்கப்ஸ் அவர்களும் மிஸ்டர் சந்திரசேகர் அவர்களும் பேச இருக்கின்றார்கள். தி டாபிக் தி செவன்போல்ட் காட் ஆஃப் பீயிங். முதலாவதாக மிஸ்டர் கேரி சார் அவர்களை இப்பொழுது பேச அழைக்கிறேன்.
Good morning. Today we're on chapter 27, which was originally the last chapter of book 1, in which Sri Aurobindo summarizes and gives us a complete overview of what he has said in the previous 26 chapters. About 20 years later, he wrote an additional chapter in which he fills in some smaller misslinks in this process. But this chapter gives us the whole overview. Though it's a short chapter, it gives a vision which doesn't exist in the world. It gives a vision that in some sense is so simple that we wonder why we struggled through 26 chapters, because after all, what he's saying is very simple. And it's so beautiful. It's beautiful in its simplicity. And the very notion that life divine is something unfathomable, like the absolute itself, disappears when we just see the main lines that he presents here. There is a theory in physics that the greatest truths are really simple, and that the greatest truth of a theory is shown by its beauty. And I can't imagine anything more beautiful than what he has described here as the true origin and nature of the universe and of our lives in that universe. It's the story of creation. Or as Appa says, so wonderfully, it's the horoscope of the universe. This is our horoscope. We'll follow through his arguments as he really traces from chapter 9, the pure existent conscious force, two chapters on the delight of being, divine Maya, the chapters on supermind, divine soul, mind, life, and matter. We'll see he covers the whole thing in outline, but now he tells us, he shows us how everything fits in together as parts of one picture. So there's nothing that he tells us here that we haven't heard before. Nothing in this chapter that we haven't read before, except perhaps a few small points at the end which tie it together. So he starts with the greatest of all discoveries of all time, the Vedantic discovery of Satchidananda, that there is an existence beyond the manifest universe that cannot be described in any other terms except to say that it is, it exists, it is conscious, and it is bliss. Beyond that, we cannot describe it. It is absolute in its existence, eternal and infinite. It is absolute and infinite in its consciousness and its force. And it's absolute in its bliss and delight, unwavering in the beauty and joy and love of that experience. And he says, that is not all. There is something beyond. There is something beyond even that, but it's indescribable. Or rather, it's not that there's something beyond Satchidananda, it's just that our words to describe it don't really describe that reality. This is the only way we can experience and describe the absolute, but it does not fully do justice to the infinity, eternity, or marvel that the absolute is. So he says that Satchidananda is the nature of the divine being. What do we mean by that? Well, when we describe somebody's personality, we say, what is he like? Well, Lizzie's very energetic, she's cheerful, she's bold, she's strong. That's her nature. Well, what is the nature of the divine being? Pure existence, consciousness, and bliss are the only words that come to us. And this Satchidananda has become the universe. Not just created the universe, but he's going to tell us in chapter 2 of book 2, which we'll get to in August, or maybe September, that this Satchidananda is not a creator standing outside and creating something else. Satchidananda itself has become the universe. And the whole secret of the universe is that this is Satchidananda. This pure existence, consciousness, and bliss is the origin of the universe. It's the continent of the universe. What does he mean by that? It's the very foundation on which the universe stands. It is the body, the mass on which the universe is based, and all our movement and action is on that firm, eternal, infinite footing. And it's the ultimate reality behind everything that expresses in the universe. And if there's one message that comes out in this chapter, maybe more fully for me than other chapters, is that everything that happens, everything that exists, is a partial, limited expression of that reality unfolding in the process of unfolding itself. And therefore, nothing is to be rejected, but nothing is to be accepted as it is. Everything is to be accepted in order to find the truth behind it. If Darcy calls her tolerable, there must be a truth behind that for her to discover, for him to discover. And this truth they discover is love and marriage at the end of the story. Whatever the disguise it comes in, even if it comes as a scandal, a false scandal by Wickham, or a crisis of Lydia's elopement, there is a truth behind it that's trying to come out. And this is the message of this chapter. The whole universe is an appearance, is a mask, or it's a work in progress. And our job as the artist is to find out what is the truth that's trying to emerge, and to bring out that truth in ourselves and in everyone we meet and in every action that we event to discover it. Because this chapter is really very simple in its message, I really want questions so that we can interact on it and make it as real and personal as possible. So we start with the pure existent. And then he tells us that that existence has a nature, and its nature is it's conscious. It's infinitely conscious. It's an infinite consciousness force, eternal and infinite. It's not just some inert thing that's existed forever and this forever. It's conscious, it's a being, and it's got self-awareness. It's a self-aware being. It knows itself. And it has the capacity not only for self-awareness, but self-knowledge. What does it mean? It can not only know itself to exist, it can know itself in any form that it takes. I may know that I'm myself. I also know myself by my actions, by my deeds, by the words I speak, by the feelings I have. So this infinite consciousness is capable of an infinite self-awareness and an infinite knowledge. What can it know? It can know anything that it wants to become. Because it can become anything, and it can know itself as anything because it's infinite. And that consciousness is also an omnipotent force. Anything it knows, anything it wants to become, it has the power and force to become. And since there is no other existence, and there's no other consciousness, and there's no other force, how can anything be impossible for it? Something can be impossible if there's a limit. Something can be impossible if there's an opposition. For such a demand that there can be no limit because it's infinite. There can be no opposition because it's the only thing that exists. There can be no limit because it's infinite in consciousness and force. He says, ready? Its self-consciousness is omnipotent. If he says that self-consciousness is omniscient, it's understandable. We say it knows everything. He says that self-consciousness is omnipotent, meaning it can become anything that it is aware of. Then he says that force, that self-force is omniscient, meaning anything it knows, it has the power to be. This is the foundation of all. For us, it's fine, that's Satchidananda, but we must understand, and in this chapter he tries to tell us, that everything in the universe is an expression of that. And therefore, there can be no limit to what that can become. And we are also that. So there can be no limit to what we can become. Well, we know there are limits. There are practical limits. We run into them every day. In book two, in part one of book two, he's going to explain in more detail than he has up until now the nature of the ignorance we live in. He's already told us something. We'll see something today, and next chapter he explains it in more detail. But he really saves it till book two, that we fully understand how the infinite has become, the infinite knowledge has become universe of ignorance. And that's part one of book two. And in part two, how that ignorance is evolving back towards knowledge. through spiritual evolution. That we will come back to later. But in principle, we must understand, when he told us in the first chapter that divine life is not only possible, he said it's inevitable. I was wondering when I first read it, how can he say it's inevitable? How can anyone know that anything is inevitable? When we understand what he said in this chapter, we would understand it is inevitable. It's not a question of it's a nice thing, it'll be good, maybe it will happen, there's a good probability. It is inevitable, that's what's been happening all along, and it is just the question of the next step. This Satchananda is a pure oneness without form, without division. And that oneness is the foundation for everything, for all the world that exists, all the planes that exist. But that oneness puts forth a movement, and that movement is a movement from unity to multiplicity, and from multiplicity back to unity. It involves itself in a world of multiple things which appear to be separate from one another, as we appear to be separate from one another. And it evolves back from that multiplicity to discover the inherent unity and oneness of everything. And that is the journey we are on. The involution has taken place, creating a world of billions of things and billions of souls. And those souls are in the process of evolving back, not to disappear in the oneness, but to discover the unity that is behind the multiplicity, that's expressing, the oneness that's expressing through the multiplicity. The oneness is the essence. The movement of unity and multiplicity is the creation. This is Satchitananda's creation, the joy of expressing all the potential that's there in the Absolute, the infinite potential that's there. It has the joy of expressing it by manifesting a universe and watching that universe evolve, or evolving in that universe. This unity is the basis for everything that exists, for all form, for all force, for all idea, for every being. And no matter how many we are, that is always our base, that is always the truth of our being. He calls cosmos an infinitely variable oneness. It never ceases to be one, and yet it's full of infinite variability. And that's what we see, and that's what we experience. So these are the three: pure existence, consciousness force, and then the light of being. The consciousness of that, the experience of that conscious being is the delight of existence. Anything is for it only an experience of delight, whether it's pure self-awareness of that being, or it's the manifestation of that being, and we'll talk about more later. And now we come to the fourth, which is supermind. He says, supermind is the creative power of Satchitananda. He says it's the nature of Satchitananda. As Satchitananda is the nature of the Absolute, supermind is the nature of Satchitananda. It's how Satchitananda expresses itself in the universe. And he tells us that if it wasn't for Superman, we could never have an orderly universe. We would simply have an infinity out there all at once. It would be like my speaking every thought that's in my head simultaneously. It won't make sense to anybody. It may be everything, but it would be everything without relationship to anything else. Satchidananda, supermind is the power of Satchidananda to manifest in an orderly way something of the infinite potential that's there in it. Jane Austen has written so many stories, but she's written each as a distinct story. She's not tried to tell all the stories at once in the same. She's not put all the characters and events in one story at one time. There's a sequence. There's a timing. We start out with the arrival of Bingley. We don't start off with the alluded and the marriage. It's not all there at once. It unfolds in a sequence in time. It unfolds as a sequence of space. Some power must be there to regulate the manifestation of the infinity. We use it all the time when we say, I have something very important to tell you, please let me tell you. Well, calm down. Start at the beginning. Let's start at the beginning. Just slow down a minute. Don't speak everything at once. Tell me what happened. Where did you go this morning? What happened? What did you say? Tell me. Go through. So, supermind is that power to start at the beginning and tell a story and experience a story in a way that we can understand it. And supermind, being the nature of Satchidananda, it too has a power of knowledge and a power of self-awareness and a power of force. He says knowledge and will. The creative consciousness of supermind is an infinite knowledge and an infinite will. But an infinite knowledge and will guided by an idea. He calls it a real idea. That is, Satchidananda wants to manifest a universe. It has an idea for that universe. It has all the knowledge necessary and all the will or power necessary to manifest that. Supermind is the power it uses, the instrument it uses, in order to manifest an orderly universe in which everything is in harmony with everything else. Because it's infinite, and Satchidananda has big plans for our universe. This is not a simple story. After all, in our story of Pride and Prejudice, we've got a few characters and something going on. Supermind is manifesting a story with 7 billion heroes and heroines all going on simultaneously. And yet all must be held together in a coherent, harmonious way, the same way Jane Austen holds this story together within a fabric and a framework in which it proceeds from beginning to end, from the first arrival of Bingley at Meryton up until the final marriage at the end. Supermind has this power to manage an infinity of beings and forces and actions and forms in a manner that's harmonious. If we contrast supermind with ourselves, with our mind, he says in supermind, knowledge and will are one. They're inseparable from one another. Look at Darcy. He goes and proposes to Elizabeth at Hunsford. His mind is telling him, I know I shouldn't marry you. You come from a very low family. Your mother is abominable. Your sister is outrageous. Even your father's not. But what can I do? I love you. In spite of myself, I am compelled to propose to you. His knowledge is in one area, his will goes in another area. Elizabeth, when she reads his letter at Hunsford, oh, that Wickham, he really is a rogue. He's really been misleading me. He's really been telling lies. But anyway, he's very attractive. I still like him. Knowledge and will go in different directions. That's our problem. If only all that we knew we could do, all that we want to do, we know how to do. Supermind doesn't have that problem. Whatever it knows, it has the power to achieve. And that's the universe it created. And it should raise a lot of questions for us. Because if Supermind has created this universe, it doesn't look to us as if everything's going the way it should go. If this is really such an omnipotent power and infinite knowledge and force, is this really the way universe should be? Is this the way my life should be? Is this the way everything should be? And there's the whole secret of life divine for us to understand what's happening here. What is the significance of what's happening to us in our lives and how it really is the will of supermind working itself out in evolution. That's the knowledge this book gives us. So, supermind creates an orderly relationship. It unfolds the unity into multiplicity, and it governs the multiplicity as it's moving back towards unity. He calls the divine gnosis. Gnosis is the Greek word for knowledge. Divine gnosis, which creates, governs, and upholds the whole universe and everything in it. And he says, the supermind has a double faculty. We've already read about it and discussed it, but here it becomes very clear why he talks about it. He says, supermind comprehends the oneness. All the time it remembers it's one and everything's one. At the same time, it has the capacity to apprehend separate things within itself. Think of Jane Austen writing the story. All the time she knows she's Jane Austen, all the time she has in mind the whole story, this is the story she wants to tell. But she's able to also perceive the separate characters in the story, separate events in the story, and give them a life and an action of their own. She's able to see Elizabeth as a separate character. Actually, Elizabeth is only herself. She's able to see Jane, Elizabeth, Mrs. Bennet, Lydia, Charlotte, all the characters as if they have an independent existence, when all the time they exist only in her imagination. This is the power of supermind to apprehend, to see as an object what's really itself. She sees, this is my character Elizabeth. She's so alive to her, she must be so thrilled when she writes the story and she's dreaming of Elizabeth, but Elizabeth's only in her own mind. But to her it's acquired an independent reality. This is the power of supermind. All the time it knows it's only one. But at the same time, it has the capacity to become an infinite variety of different things and know them as separate. Now, you can recognize this because we're the second part of the equation. We think of ourselves as separate. We don't know that we're one. We have lost that power to know that we are really all the creations of Satchidananda, that we're really all one soul, one being, one Ishwara. We think of ourselves as separate and we see everybody else as separate. We're living in the story. We don't have the vision of Jane Austen who created the story. We have the vision of the characters in the story. Why did that man call me Talib? Who is he to call me Talib? That's where we are. And we have to find a way to get back from being characters in the story to having the delight that Jane Austen has in creating this story, participating in the story, and all the time knowing that it's only an expression of herself. It is double power of supermind that enables Satchidananda to create a world of many and yet never cease to be one. You and I cease to be one, at least in our surface consciousness. But supermind, which has created us, never ceases to know. And in the depths of our soul, we too know that all the time we are one. So, supermind creates an appearance of division, but it's not a real division. Just the way Jane Austen, in her imagination, she imagines Lady Catherine and Elizabeth meeting at Longbourn and debating and arguing with one another and quarreling. They're two independent forces, but to Jane Austen, all the time it's happening inside her. She's having the joy of that quarrel and of feeding both sides of the quarrel with clever remarks to make it more enjoyable. We need to get back from the character to experience it the way supermind experiences it, which is the true way in which it's happening. So the visions that we see in the world are only apparent divisions. He calls them unseparating divisions. No matter how hard Darcy and Elizabeth quarrel or Lady Catherine and Elizabeth quarrel, they're inseparable. They're parts of Jane Austen's consciousness. It's only a play for delight. We see the division. We take the quarrel seriously. We take the crisis very seriously. Oh, I don't know what to do about this. There's no resolution. It's not the quarrel is the problem. We must get back and see the underlying unity that makes this an expression of delight. So this is the double power of supermind. And that supermind upholds the whole universe in knowledge. It never ceases to understand what goes on. It never gets lost in the story and forgets what's going on. At the same time, it's the power of supermind that is upholding the consciousness of each of us in the ignorance. It's supermind that's giving us the consciousness to quarrel, to disagree, the limitation of supermind. And that limitation of supermind is what we call the ignorance. And that's what he's going to explain to us. He calls supermind the fourth. In the tradition, in the Hindu tradition, they speak of a fourth, Turiya. But what I have said, maybe somebody has understood it as supermind, but mostly you understand there's something else there. But what it is, he explains to us that in order for cosmos to exist, there have to be separate centers of consciousness. In other words, Jane Austen says, I have a wonderful story in my head. But in order for that story to exist, there must be characters that are each experiencing the events from a different point of view. Otherwise, Jane Austen is just sitting there in her imagination having things go on. Satchidananda can have all types of imagination. But if it wants to create what we call a cosmos, there must be beings and objects within that cosmos that each experience the world from their own perspective. So
When Bingley comes to Meryton, Mrs. Bennett says, Mr. Bennett, news, there's news that somebody has come. We look at it from her point of view. And he says, why is that news for us? Why should I care about that? Or has he come to marry one of my daughters? He looks at it from his point of view. She looks from her point of view. Percy looks, why are we coming to this primitive place where savages are dancing? Cosmos is a world in which many beings look at and experience life from different points of view. If we all had the same experience, there would be no relationship. If we all saw and felt the same thing at every moment, there would be no we would not be different people. We could not be different. We could not be expressing anything different. So, that is the purpose of mind, is to create separate centers, separate viewpoints. That's why when Jane Austen tells a story, she tells us what Lizzie feels. She speaks out what Lizzie's thinking, what Darcy's thinking, what Jane's thinking. The story is there because each of the characters is thinking differently, not like the author. So this is the function of mind. In supermind, there is no separate consciousness. There's an infinite consciousness. It is the power of mind, which is a power of supermind, to create separate consciousness, each looking at the same experience from a different point of view. So, mind is a faculty of supermind. Mind is a faculty of supermind to measure and limit the infinity so that we can each experience it differently. So that supermind can view its creation through different centers. Each of us can have a different experience. Each of us can interact with others, each having a different experience, so that we can create a variety, a multiplicity. If we're all feeling and thinking the same thing all the time, there's no relationship. It's only talking to ourselves. But when we talk to other people, we really think we're talking to somebody differently and wondering, why doesn't that person think the way I think, and why don't they agree with everything I say? That's cosmos. Different points of view, different experiences. When Bingley sees, yes? The difference is that we only see one part of the story. We only see one of the million sides of the story. We're like Darcy. What animal is this dance with these savages around? Even when Bingley says, why don't you dance with her? She's also very beautiful, tolerable. We look at it from one point of view, very narrow point of view. Jane Austen sees from all the points of view. But her point of view doesn't make it a story. It becomes a story when we identify with Darcy. Darcy looks at Elizabeth and says she's tolerable. Elizabeth hears him saying she's tolerable. Who is that man who's so proud to call me tolerable? And she laughs. That is the experience of the cosmos. Different experiences. I don't know whether I have say it. You want to tell a joke to somebody, and the moment I get a funny story to tell you, I know that story. You're beginning a new novel. It's supposed to be a very famous mystery novel, and somebody comes in and says, "Oh, I know who did it. It was done by the butler. Why did you tell me and spoil the whole story?" Our experience comes because we travel in space and time and have a different experience. If we already know everything before it happens, there's no experience. Yes. We see only one side, one part, one infinitesimal part of the whole. Just as when Collins comes to Meryton, he only thinks of his point of view. He doesn't know what Lizzie's thinking, Mrs. Bennett's thinking, Mr. Bennett's only coming for amusement, Mrs. Bennett's only thinking of entail. Jane and Lizzie are only trying to run away and stay as far away from him as possible. Lydia is annoyed because he wants to give sermon when she wants to read a novel. Each has a different experience. We see only one part of the experience. Our experience is one part of the totality. Supposing we're aware of everybody's experience, then our life will be very rich. If we experience the story, not our lives, not just from one point of view, but from every point of view, our knowledge will be total. Our experience will be total. We'll be in harmony with everything else, but there's something else. That's only the people. This is a manifestation of supermind, Satchitananda. We must know what the divine is intending here as well. If we know the divine intention, if we know and understand or identify with the perspective of everybody else, and if we also see and live through our unique experience, then we have the total experience that Satchitananda is looking for, and it will be an experience of exquisite delight. Every moment will be in a delight. It will be an experience of total harmony. Now we're only wondering, why is that person in my way? Why are they not doing, they're preventing me from doing what I want to do? We're really cut off from that reality. It's not that an individual viewpoint is wrong. An individual viewpoint is limited. When we know the truth of our unique individuality, we must know the truth of everybody else's individuality also. And we must know the truth of the transcendent, which is creating us, of which we are expression. Then the full vision of the marvel will be there.
The way life goes, principles,
again,
we are attracting its people and going their point of view. We will only understand only as we experience.
What we know from interacting with others, I don't know what your experience is, but it's very limited. What we get from interacting with others is not so much to fully understand them. We don't understand ourselves. No? Each interaction with others helps us become more conscious, or should help us become more conscious of ourselves and the limitations in our understanding. Even with myself, with whom I'm supposed to be identified, I know only a little. How can I understand the other person fully? But each time somebody comes and behaves in a way that surprises me or looks, I don't agree with it, or that doesn't seem to me the right way, it can make me more conscious of my own limitation. To go from your ask, the question, the wonderful question, that's book two, part two. How do we get out of the ignorance? How do we move from here to there? It's a long, he'll give us a short answer. The short answer is, on the surface, it doesn't matter if we live for 30,000 years or 30 million years, from the surface consciousness of divided mind, we can never get out of the ignorance. For the simple reason, the mind itself is an instrument of ignorance. The mind is an instrument to divide reality, to limit reality, to look at it from one point of view. So if we're going to sit around together for 30,000 years, and if you're willing to listen to me, essentially I'll say you, please appreciate my point of view. That won't get me out of the ignorance or anyone else out of the ignorance. Are we capable of listening to 30 different points of view and appreciating all of them? Especially when they all seem to conflict with one another? Is our mind capable of that? If we can patiently listen to 30 different points of view on one thing or everything, and fully, yes, I see. Now I see, I thought I was the only one who's right. You're right, you're also right. Even though we disagree, we're all right. I see it now. Then we're no longer in mind. We're in over mind. Because over mind, this is next chapter. Over mind can see the totality and see the truth. Huh? That's good manners. That's not known. We live on the surface. The surface is an instrument of ignorance and division. In the surface, I can appreciate my point of view. I look at my point of view. Darcy looks and says she's tolerable. Bingley says Jane is very pretty and she's dancing with me, so I must be important. Each person, yes. He does. Darcy does come to feel that Lizzie is beautiful. At least in that measure, he has moved from the surface mind to the... But that doesn't mean he feels that Lydia is very wonderful. Mrs. Bennett is the ideal mother-in-law. It's a one partial experience he's had of emerging out of ignorance. True. Why he called her tolerable? He's looking through the senses. He's looking at a human being who's really a divine being, looking at her just from the dress, from the hair, from the complexion, saying she's tolerable. He doesn't see her mind. He doesn't see her emotions. He doesn't see her soul. He doesn't see anything behind the senses. Obviously, the senses are not going to give us the reality. So, I'm glad this is all wonderful questions, because you're... we have to understand where we are. To understand where we are is to understand that we live in the ignorance. In the ignorance, we all feel separate from one another. in mind, I can see you. I relate to you with the five senses. I can't see your thoughts. I can't feel what you feel. I can't know your intention. The truth is, I don't even know my own intention. I'm not even conscious of myself. How can I be conscious? Because I'm living right on the surface. Darcy, when he sees Elizabeth, doesn't realize this is his soulmate. When he's with her at Huntsford, at Netherfield, he doesn't realize he's falling in love with her. He's still thinking her class is low, her relatives are in cheap society, her mother's an abomination, her sister's an outrage. Even when he proposes to her, he's divided in two. But by the end of the story, with respect to Elizabeth, not anything else in the world, but with respect to Elizabeth, I can't live without her. She's part of me. She's divine. She's perfect. She's heavenly. That's the role of romance in his evolution of consciousness. He's come from the crude senses, from the arrogance of an aristocrat who looks at everybody just in terms of how much money they have or where they live. How foolish it is, no? Then he sees her energy, then he sees her intelligence, then he sees her courage and strength, and finally he sees something. We can't see it. We're not in love with Elizabeth the way he is. He sees a soul. He says, I can't live without you. Everything's perfect. This is the journey of mind out of the ignorance. We live in the ego. He lives in the ego. He says, I'm a very important person. Why should I come to this low place with savages who dance? Later on, he doesn't mind dancing with Lizzie. He asks her to dance at Netherfield. He asks her to dance. Finally, he gets her to dance at Netherfield Ball. I thought only savages dance. He was in the social personality. He was judging her with his senses. He's judging her with his social arrogance of, I'm an important person. Even when he proposed to her, he said, after all, I'm worth 10,000 pounds a year. Anybody would like to marry me, so I'll marry you. She says, you haven't asked me yet. Well, what do you say? You're the last man. Last man? How can I be the last man? He never thinks that she could have a different point of view because he's in the ignorance. So he tells us, the answer I can give is a short answer. It's very simple. But you will like it only when we... The short answer is, he tells us this in every chapter. We have to get out of the surface ignorance. Move to the psychic. Get out of the senses. The senses don't tell us the truth. What our eyes see, what our ears sound, hear, don't tell us the truth. Our thoughts don't tell us the truth because they're ignorant. Our emotions don't tell us the truth. They're egoistic, selfish. We have to get out of the ego and the desire soul and get to the psychic. The psychic is the soul in us, which is in touch with the truth of supermind. It is the spirit in us that knows the truth. But it's there in the ignorance. It can't fully express itself. Even when the psychic says to Darcy, if supposing he was psychically awake and he sees Lizzie for the first time, Bingley says, come and dance with her. Something in him will feel, yes, I should dance with her. And then his senses will say, she's only tolerable. His mind will say, she comes from a lower class. His emotions will say, what would Lady Catherine say if she knew I was dancing with Elizabeth? So it's all right for Bingley, after all, Bingley's only coming up. But I must be hold up my status. So even when the psychic is saying, go dance with her, she's the one. The mind will interfere, the emotions will interfere, the vital will interfere, because on the surface we're in the ignorance.
So he says it's not enough you reach the psychic. From the psychic, you must rise up. And that's the next chapter. He's going to tell us that journey. You must rise up to the higher mind, the illumined mind, the overmind, to reach the supermind, and bring down the supermental truth to transform the mind. The mind is a subordinate power of supermind. It's capable of being an instrument for supermind. The problem is that it's not being an instrument. It's doing what its own thing. It's not listening to supermind. Mind can know the truth if it will simply shut up and allow supermind to express. But the mind says, I have an opinion. I have a thought on this. Please listen to me. I have a theory. I have an explanation. Mind is not listening to anybody. Mind is thinking it's an instrument of knowledge when it's not. The vital, he's going to tell us, our life is the power of chit, of conscious force. Chit, the conscious force of Satchitananda, has leashed forth its power of consciousness and created a universe. Each of us has a little portion of that which is defined by our separate existence. As I look out at the world from my mind, I look at the world of life, from my viewpoint. When you get 100 crores, I say, what about me? I don't feel like I got 100 crores. I don't realize you are me. My life is the cosmos. There's only one life. There's not so many lives. There's only one. I must celebrate each time something good happens to everybody else. But I'm locked in this little illusion of ignorance. So that I am experiencing the cosmic life only from the ego's point of view. That's why he says self-giving is important. Goodwill is important. Who are we having goodwill for? We're having goodwill for ourselves. When we have goodwill for everybody, we're still having goodwill for ourselves, because everybody is ourself, is the truth. It's not a philosophy. There's a new book that has come out. I found this week, if I wanted to see it. It's called Give and Take. It's an American book. It's a study on self-giving. And they have found that people who practice self-giving succeed more. Which is contrary to, this is a world where everybody has to look out for themselves. That's what we feel. This is a world where everybody takes. But they've studied it in many different fields. The person who's most interested in helping others are the most successful people. It's a spiritual truth. The scientist doesn't know there's a spiritual truth. He doesn't know why it's there. He's just studying and measuring and actually found out that it's true. But that's what, it has to be true according to Life Divine. So, the message is there in every chapter. Right now, he's trying to tell us, to get us to see the whole. He has another 14 chapters on the ignorance. So that we fully understand the nature of the ignorance. And he's got another 14 chapters on how to get out of the ignorance. And I assure you, he doesn't leave any stone unturned. He doesn't miss anything. He knows all our tricks. He knows all our weaknesses. He knows every way we have of remaining ignorant. He knows the taste of ignorance and how much we enjoy it. And he tells us how we are coming out of it. So, Mind, life, and matter are the three subordinate powers from above. We've talked about mind as a power of supermind. Life is the power of the consciousness force of Satchidananda. But the consciousness of force of Satchidananda is universal and infinite, and the version we have of that consciousness force is individual and finite. In fact, we're turned against each other, each competing with the other. Oh, she got something, I didn't get it. He got something, I didn't get it. It's one universal cosmic force, but because of the ego, because of the division, we think that we're all separate and we compete with each other when actually we all belong to the same family. It's more than that. We all have the same bank account. We're all rushing to get money. I must earn more. She got a raise. I didn't get a raise. He got a property inheritance. I didn't get a property inheritance. I need more to put in my bank account. We don't realize there's only one bank account. Whoever earns the money and puts it away goes into bank account. It belongs to everybody. So we are in the ignorant. But the energy of our life is the energy of Satchidananda. The force that we express is the force of Satchidananda. The consciousness which we have is the consciousness of Satchidananda. There's only one consciousness. There's no two characters, there's only one. But we take a tiny little part of it, we say this is mine, and that's hers, and we compete with one another. All we need to do is recognize that the force of my life is not my separateness. The truth of my life is my oneness. I have to expand out, instead of competing with everybody, instead of protecting myself from everybody, I have to expand out and realize that everybody's part of me, part of my life, and then my life becomes universal. It becomes infinite. That we cannot do just by thinking of it, that we cannot do by just by talking about it, that we must do by a spiritual growth. But when life comes to us, we should understand that whatever comes to us to help us make that progress. When Lizzie abuses Darcy, he realizes, see, she seems to be saying something important for me. He's calling me selfish, mean, and arrogant. It's not very pleasant to hear, but there must be some truth in it. He's a devotee. He's a devotee. If he can take what comes from life and say, there's a truth in this for me, I should learn something from this. And he decides to learn something from it, and he grows by that. He moves from the surface ego towards the psychic in the depths. So let's just see if we can go through the... So then we're on number 7 now, matter. We have 8. Matter is what? Matter is substance. Mind gives a viewpoint. Life gives us an energy or a force. But the universe contains form, substance, objects. Matter is the form in which we experience the universe. Matter is Satchidananda, he tells us. We read 2 chapters on matter is only the form in which we are experiencing Satchidananda. We experience it as separate objects. We see the object has no consciousness to it, no force to it. It's just an inanimate object, we think, because of the way we are relating to it. After all, when Darcy sees Lizzie, he also thinks she's pretty much an inanimate object. He says she's tolerable. He's only looking at the complexion. He's not looking at the fire in her eyes. He's not seeing the emotions. He's not seeing the courage. He's not seeing the intelligence. He's simply looking at her as if she's an object. That's the way we see everything and everyone, externally. But the forms we see, at least we know, we can testify with ourselves. See, there's somebody inside here. You may not see, but I know. I'm alive. I have thoughts. I have feelings. That's how we all feel. We may not grant the same thing to everybody else. When we look at others, we may see the sari or the shirt or something like that. But at least with ourselves, we know there's somebody in here. It's real. I'm real. Everybody is like that. This is only the external form that's concealing. What is it concealing? It's concealing a mind. It's concealing a heart. It's concealing a life. It's concealing a soul. And if we go further, we'll find out it's concealing the divine being. Everything is in here. Everything in each of us. Matter is only the substantial appearance by which we see it as an object so we can interact with one another. And when we have the supramental vision, we will still see separate forms, and we will still see them and interact with them, but we will not call anybody tolerable. We will not see resplendent beauty and joy and goodness and divine qualities radiating out through the form. And Mother says, without clothes, she sees the supernal, she has visions of people. They're not wearing any clothes, but they're bathed in a light that becomes a garb for them. Their very consciousness becomes their clothes. The beauty of their consciousness becomes that which cloaks their form, rather than the putting on these things. So, that's matter. And then there's an eighth. He called this chapter the sevenfold cord of being, but he's talking about eight. He says in the tradition they talked about seven. Maybe because, he doesn't say it in this chapter, but maybe because in the tradition they knew the soul as the transcendent soul, the jiva, jivatma. But they didn't know of the soul as the evolving psychic, evolving in nature. And of course for him, that's the whole key. If you want moksha, if you want to get out, it doesn't matter. You don't need to go to the psychic. But if you want the spiritual evolution, you have to find the spirit in nature. That's the psychic. The psychic is the meeting point of mind, life, and body. It's the real, it's ourself. It's the real truth of our being, not this thing on the surface. I have so many needs, so many thoughts, so many opinions, so many desires. All that's just ignorance on the surface. The psychic is our true inner being. And the psychic is a projection of the fourth power there of Ananda. The psychic is the representation in the universe of Ananda. So we've got existence, consciousness, bliss, supermind above, and we have mind, life, psychic, and matter below. This is the eightfold. The four above is the upper hemisphere. The four below are the lower hemisphere. Supermind becomes mind. The conscious force becomes life. Sat expresses as existence. The bliss of Ananda expresses as the psychic, which means that everything in the world is an expression of Satchitananda, of the higher truth. It's an ignorant expression. And we need to find out how to go back and reveal the Satchitananda that's in everything. Satchitananda's in each of us. In every act, in every moment, in every person we meet, it's there. We meet it on the surface as pleasure or pain, as ignorance, as competition, as good things and bad things, as luck and bad luck and all. But everything that comes to us is a disguised appearance of that Satchitananda. And he says, the whole of life is that. The whole world is that. And it's not that Satchitananda is up there. It's not that Satchitananda is up there and we're down here. We are Satchitananda. Satchitananda is in everything. There is nothing that it's not in. And Satchitananda is trying to come out and express itself. As life has come out of matter, as mind has evolved out of life, and we are thinking, living, material form. Not like the stone which is just material or the animal which is just living. We are thinking, living, material forms. It's inevitable that supermind which is inside us, just the way life was there in the stone and mind was hidden in life, supermind is coming out in us and trying to express itself. And when it comes out, it won't stop there. It won't stop until Ananda expresses. The conscious force, the infinite consciousness force expresses. Until the infinite being expresses in the cosmos. And the four that are now concealed will be fully revealed. And that's what he means by divine life. And that's why he says divine life is inevitable. Because it's already there. It's not that we have to get something and we have to go someplace. It's already here. We simply have to allow it to come to the surface. Well, we're not maybe worried about Satchitananda right now. Maybe even supermind looks far off. But everything that can make our life a life of joy and delight and fulfillment and power, knowledge and accomplishment, is already there within us. We don't need to go out. If we want money, we don't need to borrow it. If we want luck, we don't need to expect somebody to come. If we want knowledge, we don't need to look for it. Everything we want, infinitely, is there inside. What we need to do is, instead of looking outside and who will give me this and how will I get that and where can I go for this joy and this delight and all, we need to go and find it inside. It's there. That is the... Nothing is out of our reach. Papa says 100 crores. He would probably say much more, but even that sounds like a lot to us, no? You think 100 crores is there? There's only one bank account. When you know there's only one bank account, you know that it's not even... 100,000 crores is a small amount. You have an infinite bank account. It's not your personal bank account. You're thinking it's a personal bank account. You think I only put in 1 lakh and therefore there's 1 lakh in the account. Whatever you have put in or not, the whole hundreds of thousands of crores is there in your bank account. It's always been there. You look inside. No, where can I make more money outside? So that is the message of this chapter. All the eight parts of the being are there, here, now. We talk about supermind descending, but supermind's already there. Supermind's already inside us. What we want to do is bring that supermind out. And it will descend also. But it will descend because supermind is already hidden behind the scenes. The light of existence is hidden. We don't need to go anywhere to get the light, to get fulfillment, to make every moment rich and happy. It's all there just waiting to come out. But we have to give up our smallness. We have to give up our narrowness. We're so used to trying to take what we need. it's very difficult to reverse the process and convince ourselves that the more I give, the more I will get. Because what we need to do is open so that the infinity that's there inside can come out.